The following episode of Bookmark was first broadcast April 8th, 2025. Every day, every day. All right, good afternoon and welcome to Bookmark, where today we are celebrating National Poetry Month with a brand new edition of When the River Speaks, a community-published poetry and art anthology, as in community, that being our community, San Marcos. And today we have Edie Watson, who is one of the founders of the journal. Thank you for coming. Say hello so we'll know you're there.
Hi, Priscilla. All right. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And three of the contributors to the current issue, Marita Hutchinson, Jacqueline Miller, and Blaise Turley. And I'll introduce E.D. and I'll let our poets introduce themselves when they read for us. E.D. is an award-winning poet, yoga teacher, and certified practitioner of poetic medicine. I keep wanting to ask, remember to ask more for more about that.
I'm happy to talk about it. I can talk about it ad nauseum.
Okay. In Central Texas, she's the author of one full-length poetry collection, Honey in the Vein, and two chapbooks, Anorexicism.
Anorexicism.
Anorexicism. and Via Dolorosa and Advent Wreath, which was the winner of the 2023 Cow Creek Chapbook Prize. She has an MFA in creative writing from Texas State, and she works at the San Marcos Public Library. Would you like me to add anything about you?
Wow, I think that about covers it.
Okay.
Thank you for that intro.
All right. Would you talk about how the journal came about? I know it was you and a number of other people. I mean, did you sort of see a need in the community for something like this?
Yeah, the journal was actually the brainchild of one of our librarians at the library, Deborah Carter. And it kind of happened during COVID when we were all isolated and a lot of poetry events in the community had kind of gone dormant just mm-hmm. because people weren't able to gather in person anymore. And we really felt like a need to sort of hold the community together and to create a place for us to continue to be able to share our work with each other and to just network and kind of reach out. And so it was around 2021 when people were kind of starting to venture out into public again that we had the idea and just called a bunch of people together from the community and some people on staff who we thought might be interested at the library to just kind of help with the infrastructure support.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I was wondering about the date. I thought 2021, 2020.
Yeah, it's our fourth year.
Okay. How has it evolved? Is it different now than it was in the beginning? And if so, how?
Well, when we first started, we originally had the vision to do it monthly, and that was a little ambitious. Mm-hmm. Since then, we've scaled it back to quarterly, and I think for that reason, it's just a more quality journal. Mm-hmm. We're able to really spend some time with the submissions that we get. And one of the things that I'm really pleased to see is that we're starting to finally really get a lot more art submissions. And poets are always sending their stuff out, and so we were always getting a lot of really good poetry submissions, but recently we've started to get great artwork as well.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but maybe artists don't think about submitting to, you know, they think about going trying to get into a show, but they don't think about submitting to a journal. So
right. So artists out there in our community, if you're listening right now, we want to see your work. We want to put you in our journal.
Oh, okay. And how do they submit then?
We are accepting submissions constantly, so they can send all their submissions as a high-resolution JPEG file to submissions, numeral 4, WTRS, at gmail.com.
All right. Yeah, and I want to talk about the art in this one is particularly effective, I think. There was a theme for this one, right? Do you have a theme for all the issues, or did you get away from that, or I can't remember?
No, we don't have it every time. We do usually a couple themed issues a year, and then so it's about 50-50. Mm-hmm. This was our April Earth Month theme. We've done that for a couple of years in a row. We tend to get a lot of nature poetry anyway, just because of the title of the journal, I think, and our river and our natural world here is so inspirational. I know a lot of our poets, like Marita, for example, is very inspired by our river. So we just thought, let's really amp that up for Earth Month and give people a place to talk about
Do you get a lot of selections? How do you choose which ones, or do you print anything that you get, or?
Oh, it's hard to choose. We unfortunately don't have room to print everything that we get, and we get, we can't print everything. So it is really difficult to choose. It's just one of the hard things.
Yeah.
Having a theme helps us kind of narrow it down too.
Oh yeah, because you could talk about how well things fit or how well they don't. Was there anything special about this particular issue? This was, as you say, your Earth Day nature issue.
Well, one of the things that really struck me was that, I had intentionally tried to make a space for us to kind of hold some soul nostalgia, climate grief kind of feelings. And the majority of the poetry submissions that we got were really hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
So that was refreshing to read that people are really trying to fight through their poetry, for a vision of the future that is a more healed vision rather than just maybe wallowing around in despair, which is my personal tendency. But
Your own poems kind of look for a way out as well.
I do. Yeah. I have been trying to be more intentional about it in my own writing as well.
I thought in this issue that I looked at that the integration between the artwork and the poetry was particularly impressive to me. I don't know how that turned out for you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's not something I can take credit for. One of our team members, Harley McGowan, is really responsible for the look of the journal. They have been putting it together for a while now, and every time it's even prettier than the last.
Yeah. Is this the first time you've used color, or is this just the first time I've noticed it?
No, it's not the first time we used color. It's just, I think, the fact that Samantha Billings' art, who is on the cover of the journal, is just so colorful and vibrant, really pops. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's very eye-catching,
isn't it? How does she do that? Is this done on a computer? Or
I believe she's a digital artist, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's a photograph behind, but it's really quite beautiful. I want to hear from some of our poets, and I think I want to start with Marita, because her poem, My True Self Portrait, is accompanied by, and it says you took that photo, right?
Yes, I did.
And I'll need to describe it a little bit since the poem kind of references it. It is, you took a picture of your own reflection in the water, is that what it is?
That's correct,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right, and there's a tree, and so the figure is blurred but sparkly, and then you wrote your true self portrait. Would you read that for us, please?
I certainly will. Thank you so much. My true self portrait. My true self portrait is unseen and continually hewn by unfailing sacred springs. When underwater, flowing with fish, turtles, and in the time of Rona, a beaver, I'm aware of womb-like oneness. Quiet flowing, quiet communing, quiet gratitude, quiet timelessness powers me with peace and spirit pace for another day, a day above ground where my sisters and brothers are politicized, preyed upon, and parodied. When my weighted walking is in peril of a faceplant, I stabilize myself on the path of those before, contemplating Langston Hughes' Still Here and Mary Oliver's iconic question, singing Spafford's song It Is Well and all the silly songs my mother sang, practicing Rosa Parks' Courage and John Lewis's Good Trouble, trusting the Wayless Way and Indigenous Wisdom of Hope, all the while praying congruence of my unseen self with my seen.
Wow. Thank you for that. There's the unseen self and the seen, and I guess the unseen self is the self in the water who is immersed or reflected. And is that the true self? So you want to talk about...
Sure, you bet. It was intentional that my face was not pictured in the photo. Yeah. And I'm very fortunate that I get to go to the river. I live very close to our beautiful gem of a spring-fed river. Almost daily, and I swim year-round. Mm-hmm. And so I have just, and especially during COVID, it has just been solace and my emotional, mental health, as well as my physical health. And so it's been, I've just been so fortunate. And so the reason I wrote this poem was from the prompt of When the River Speaks about nature, mm-hmm. but also in the same time span was the Price Center always does, or has for about 7-8 years, has honored the International Day of the Woman.
Oh, yes.
And our prompt there was telling your story. So I married the two because I love photography, and I purposely wanted to meld those two topics. And so been also studying Meister Eckhart and Charleston, Stephen Charleston, and he's an indigenous elder as well as a pastor, and so that's where I got the Indigenous Hope, mm-hmm. and the Wayless Way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so and that's the ladder. I go to the city park and I climb down the stairs and I go to the left ladder.
Oh.
And then I swim against the current and then I float back. So
that's your true self, and the other self is, as you put it,
what everybody sees and whatever. Yeah.
The and then I go, let's see, I stabilize my a day above ground. So there's
right.
the above ground self, and there's the true self that's the self in the river.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
And I'm hoping that I'm congruent because I, you know, I feel like I've grown so much and hope to practice those things that the folks before me have practiced to help them survive. Mm-hmm. And so
yeah,
that's my hope.
Okay. I like the lines... my weighted walking, you know, when you're out above ground,
mm-hmm.
you say my weighted walking is in peril of a face plant. And I take it that part of that is, of course, if you're swimming, you're not experiencing gravity, but then when you get
right.
out of the river, so it's a literal physical thing. But is it also like a metaphor? I mean, do you face plant in front of other people or worry about it?
Right. Well, it's kind of what... we began talking, you and ED, about not being so much about despair, but that has been a very weight thing on my shoulders about just what's been happening, and because, you know, not just my human brothers and sisters, but, you know, like John Muir talking about my tall brothers and sisters, which are trees, and our environment, and all the attacks upon brothers and sisters of all beings. And so when I get in a state of despair, then it's so nice to think about the folks that came before me. How did they deal with it? How did they cope? And so that's my reference.
That's why there are all those references.
Yes, correct.
Yes, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And they're all action words, contemplating, singing, practicing, and trusting. So that's been my privilege to learn.
I don't know what the Wayless Way is, but...
Well, it's Meister Eckhart, who's a mystic and a poet, and I didn't know much about Meister Eckhart either until I started a book study at mm-hmm. the School of Wisdom at St. Mark's, and basically it's just, you can't navigate your way into being a better person, a good person. It's like a spiritual path. You just... see what's in front of you and do what you think is right. And it's not something that's scheduled. You can't schedule it. You can't plan for it.
Yeah. So you're still putting together your unseen self and your seen. And it, and I knew the Mary Oliver line. I don't know. Did you expect that your reader would know that? I mean, I'll read.
Sure.
It's the last couple of lines that are so famous. The poem is called Summer Day, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, she says, I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
That's correct. So, I just love that. It gives me chill bumps. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So were you figuring your reader would know that? Or?
Yes, and most of a lot of them do. But the last couple of times I got to read this, I did preface that almost last half of the poem by, this is what I mean by contemplating, you know, Langston Hughes, who is a Renaissance poet, and his Still Here is just an amazing poem. And yes, because when I'll read it out loud, some people do, like when I read out loud Mary Oliver's iconic question, tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? People will finish the sentence with me. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's pretty well known.
Do any of the other have a question or comment about her poem? Some of the best things are interactions, in a way.
I just really love that line about the womb-like oneness. Especially beautiful, and I have experienced that feeling myself, being in the river and being underwater, snorkeling, and just really feeling that calm and like, but feeling connected to the river at the same time.
When you think about it, it's our first home.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Yes. And I have not. I did not do my complete radio host duty and remind you that the natural impulse to look at someone when you are speaking to them must be suppressed when
my
you're
apologies.
On the radio. You have to look at this ugly black thing that is in front of your face.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And I want to read Still Here just because I looked up those poems when I read yours.
Okay, great.
And it's short. This is the Langston Hughes poem, Harlem Renaissance. I've been scarred and battered. My hopes the wind done scattered. Snow has frizzed me. Sun has baked me. Looks like between them they done tried to make me stop laughing, stop loving, stop living. But I don't care. I'm still here.
I just love that.
Yeah. So speaking of
thank
being,
you.
And speaking of being positive, I think that before we hear from another poet, we will do our first station break, if you all don't mind waiting a minute.
On the radio, this is the Sweet Honey Bear Blues on Tuesday at 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock. You got me giving you what you just didn't know you needed.
Bookmarked is brought to you in part by the Whitliff Collections at Texas State University. San Antonio has inspired generations of writers, musicians, and artists. Now, the city's creative currents are highlighted in a new exhibition at the Whitliff Collections. Spirit of San Antonio, drawn from the Whitliff's vast archival holdings, explores the city through many of its leading creative talents, including writers Sandra Cisneros, Rick Riordan, Carmen Tafoya, Naomi Shihab Nye, and many more. Also featured in the exhibition are selections from the extraordinary Ramon Hernandez Tejano Music Collection at the Whitliff, which includes treasured photographs and recordings from Tejano legends Selena, Flaco Jimenez, Sonny Ozuna, Steve Jordan, and more. Rounding out the exhibition are captivating images from celebrated photographers and artists weaving an unforgettable group portrait of this fascinating American city.
Oh, I will, yeah.
On display now at the Whitliff Collections at Texas State University. For more information, please visit thewhitliffcollections.txstate.edu.
All right, welcome back to Bookmark, where we are celebrating National Poetry Month with our own community art and poetry journal, When the River Speaks, and we have three poets who are represented in the brand new, just out April edition of When the River Speaks. We've already heard from Marita Hutchinson, and we have here Jacqueline Miller, and she's got two poems in here. Would you read the longer one, Connectivity, for me, please?
I will, thank you. Yes, I am one of those starving and thirsty artists. It's like I create, then beg for a space to share, promote, exhibit, and demonstrate this thing called connectivity. While most of the opportunities I see are more about competition laced with ammunition, ammunition that strips and dehumanizes you of your being to paralyze the desperate visionary eyes to see creative power and human touch that fuses and mends and blends the tapestry of creativity. Maybe I am addicted to those days when I was a child and all the while bicycles, skateboards, and jumping rope, new kids on the block gave a new hope. I was the new kid far too many times. Society lies and blames it on crime. Now an adult, now I see. It is unaffordable rent, tax crisis, death of a loved one causing us to take on an additional three. We needed more space to widen the room for family love and connectivity. 5+ decades in and out of crisis. As I reflect, keep hoping alive, like dust I rise. Trees surrounded by dust, flowers held by dust. Now I see I must do more than cuss. Keep searching for spaces, kicking up dust, and hope that humans would catch it to create tapestries of dust and use it as ammunition of connectivity. From a new kid on the block, who is just looking for space? I'm just looking for space.
Oh, and I love your reading. It adds a lot to the poem.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Have you read your poetry in public much?
I have for the past, I would say, about a year or so. Mm-hmm. At first, I was kind of quiet and wasn't doing as much poetically speaking. I was doing a lot of writing, but not necessarily publicly performing. Mm-hmm. And that's for various reasons.
Yeah. Connectivity. There's a true space of connectivity, and there's competition laced with ammunition. I love the cadence of that. You want to talk about that contrast? What is that ammunition that sort of inhibits the true space of creativity, at least as I read your poem?
Well, thank you. Actually, I was in an art circle space when I created this. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about, like, what was happening that very day. Like, what was happening in terms of the community, in terms of what was some of the news feed, and how people engage with each other. And what I immediately thought about in terms of, like, engagement is that so very often various things can be used as ammunition that would really silence someone or suppress their creativity, and in some cases even paralyze individuals from being their true selves, from speaking from the heart. A lot of judgmental things are happening in terms of keeping othering people or keeping folks from really gathering and connecting, and so much fear. There's so much fear that I know is surfacing in so many different ways. And so I begin to think about all the different ways that that shapes ammunition and how that looks for individuals, and how ammunition certainly can cause folks to isolate themselves out of fear of being harmed, out of fear of being just the very life taken mm-hmm. out of them. And so that comes up to me.
But there can be ammunition of creativity, right? Which is kind of like the voices that take Marita on her path. You know, those things that maybe inspire us or keep us going or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you refer to your I take it to coping with a difficult childhood, you know, when you talk about, I mean, I don't know that, but unaffordable rent, tax crisis, death of a loved one, and you take on three additional people, I assume in your family, which is quite a thing to do. And so what's the relationship between the search for the space for creativity and connectivity and coping with perhaps a difficult childhood?
Yes, thank you for the question. So my family did a lot of moving around. We had to do, we moved for various reasons. And the one line that I'm speaking of, particularly making space for an additional three, is that my stepbrother's mother passed away. So my mom was married to their dad. And so there was no question about where were they going to go and who was going to take care of them. Yeah. So we moved them into our place. Our place was very small, two-bedroom place, and that would have been a total of five children.
Wow.
Yeah, so our family size tripled. And so that was one reason that had us on the move. And then the unaffordable rent, it's like I think about that now. I think my parents were really contending with as I reflect back on my childhood, and we always lived in an apartment. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a family home, which would have been ideal, but because of like the skyrocketing of mortgages and of rent, we just were not fortunate enough to have a stable place. And then also, let me also add, is that I was a chronic asthmatic. And a lot of places that we lived at, there were lots of environmental issues. Some of those apartments, we learned later that I was allergic to carpet. So that put us on the move. So it was just various things during my childhood that had us moving around, and which also led to us moving and changing schools frequently as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like, as you were talking, I realized you're talking about the space for connectivity and creativity is metaphorical in that people, if people don't throw that judgmental ammunition at you, then you have space to grow and be. But it's also a literal space, right? I mean, if you don't have, here comes Virginia Woolf in A Room of One's Own. They're all giggling, so I guess you all at least read it or heard of it. But she maintained famously in 1928 in her essay or speech to these newly formed women's colleges that a woman needed a room of her own in order to create. And she said £500 a year. I don't know what that translates to now, a modest. And so there is that other aspect of space that's kind of in your poem as well.
Yes, absolutely. You know, actually, when I think about space in regards to like creativity, is that at home, when I was a child, I would be at the kitchen table, like many children, take up space at the kitchen table, but there wasn't really a place to contain my art and to protect them and to do things. So a lot of it ended up by default in the trash. And those were some of my most precious pieces. I'm like, no, don't throw that out. Oh my gosh, what happened? So even today, I take up a lot of space in my place with every room is full of art.
Oh, good. Do you do visual art as well as poetry?
I do. I do a lot of visual art. Yes, I do. And there are some pieces that I put. I do art to match or to accompany the poetic piece, and then vice versa.
Yeah.
So it depends on the flow.
Yeah. Would you talk a little bit about the dust image in this? Like dust I rise, trees surrounded by dust, flowers held by dust. Now I see I must do more than cuss, keep searching for spaces, kicking up dust with hope that humans, and I'll unpack that one too, would catch it to catch tapestries of dust and use it as ammunition of connectivity. What I like about that is, you know, dust is usually kind of a negative sort of thing, right? It's the stuff that you're told you're not supposed to have too much of in your house, and, you know, or everybody will shoot critical ammunition at you, which doesn't really happen, but that's what the magazines say anyway. But your dust eventually becomes the ammunition of creativity, and kicking up dust becomes a sort of assertive thing. So how did you get to that dust?
You know, actually, at this point, I begin to, it's like I heard Maya Angelou's voice in my head. And as I was writing this, and like the rhythm and the flow was coming, and it's like immediately here comes Maya Angelou, and and I could hear her saying, "I rise."
Yeah.
And then it's just like the dust part is that it's all around us, like the different the various particles of dust, and like we'll never rid ourselves of dust. We'll never be free of dust. And I began to think of about building projects and things, and with the sawing and the drilling, and here comes this dust that just rise and begins to accumulate. So I began to think about like accumulation of dust. I spent some time in West Africa about 6 months ago, and just being in the soil and being in the midst of dirt and dust, and those things begin to, my hair was full of it. Like my hair was so full of that dust and my clothing and all. So I began to just really get inspired by dust is everywhere. We'll never be free of dust. And then I began to think about, like, I looked outside and I says, well, wait a minute, look what's holding the trees, and look what's actually holding up the flowers. And it's dust. It's the accumulation and piles of dust that's there. And I began to think about the beauty of it all, and how in nature and how the ecosystem really just blends and brings itself together to create these beautiful tapestries, that if we would only take a moment to reflect and to pause and to embrace and to really like behold the beauty of it, it's like, come on, how can you not see the beauty and like the ammunition that really does serve to break and dispel and dismantle isolation and othering as well. But then this dust, like, begin all those beautiful particles that comes together, and just as a whole of what that really looks like when we hold each other together.
And that holding each other together, you use the listeners can't see it, but you spell the word humans, HUE-MANS, so suggesting that people are colors, or maybe are colored by this dust that compose. I mean, we're all a bunch of atomic dust anyway, I guess.
Yes, we are.
when you think about it. Okay, I think I realize, I forgot to ask you about your background, but I'm going to ask her first, and then I will get back to Marita. So how long have you been writing poetry? What have you done with your poetry so far? And I already kind of asked you about whether it's accompanied by visual art, would you talk about that?
So I've been writing poetry since, as far as I can remember, the age of 10. And there are many poets in my family, and I had an early interest of writing, and I would write short stories. But then I noticed that my writing began to have more like a rhythm, and like a da-da, a da-da, a da-da, a da-da. And also as a songwriter, I began to see the blend and begin to see the art and the craft that comes along with it. And so I remember making my first poetry book also. I was maybe about 13 years old then, and I dreamed of publishing and wanting to put this book out. And I made it like paper, gluing paper together, these ends of this paper, and then like drawing on the, making my own cover. But then it's like something happened after maybe I was 16 or 17 years old, and hearing this thing about doing something more serious and getting a real job and preparing for a real job, preparing for the real world and the world as an adult. And I think I somewhere got convinced that I need to put this aside because this isn't so serious. Oh. This is too much play. This is too much playing. And there isn't resources to do this thing that you want to do maybe later on. And put that down and begin to pursue looking into what is considered a real job. And that led me on the path of really wanted to advocate for people and advocate for folks to live free of oppression, free of isolation and suppression. And that led me on this journey to do more like social work, that I really wanted to help folks get to the point where they can freely be themselves, not considering and thinking about my own self at that time. So I'm really glad to be back into the poetry world, in terms of being more visible and my voice being heard. And that I have a lot to say.
Good. Well, and we're glad you're back.
Yes.
And Marita, I forgot to ask you about your sort of history with poetry. How long have you been writing? You know, what are your inspirations and so on?
Well, I'm from the big city of Kyle, Texas, and used to live right downtown on Center and Sledge. And when I was seven, my father passed, and I guess I had quite the interior life because I was known in elementary school as being like a poet laureate, and they would ask me, oh, we need this poem for this, and Marita, would you, you know, write a poem for that? And when I was writing, I was actually on the steps of our home facing Center Street, and little did I realize, but that I was looking at Catherine Ann Porter's home there in Kyle on Center Street. And so basically, I guess I've always needed to write, and I've enjoyed solitude. So that's really been my impetus.
So you've just sort of written all along.
I've written ever since I can remember.
And you've been in this journal several times, right?
Yes.
Yes. Is this your first time, or have you been published in this journal before?
Oh, this is my second time.
Okay.
Yeah. May I say something about Jacqueline's poetry? It's on the written page. I mean, on the page written, it's beautiful. However, when you are quite the artist, because you just add such rhythm artistry when you recite your poetry, you just give it so much life.
I
love hearing it and watching you and reading it all at the same time.
Oh, thank you for that.
All right. While we're at it, Jacqueline has another short poem, and we won't have time to talk about it, but since we were enjoying her reading, do you want to go ahead and read Friends of the River for us?
I will, yes. The title of this is When the River Spoke. I walked along the river and it spoke. Looking for an elfy friend soon to come, I hope. Back to being happy and flowing smooth and free. Elf stands for empathetic leader and friend of the river, that's me. This room is full of leaders and full of friends. But plastic, bottles, glass, and bags weigh me down and make me sad. No worries. Soon I'll be back to being happy again. No more plastic, bottles, glass, and bags. I am smiling. I believe I have new and caring friends, said the river.
Thank you. I have a good friend and neighbor, Susan Hansen, who maybe some of you have seen her photographs the river both underwater and the other thing she does every time she goes down there in her wetsuit and scuba gear is get a haul of trash, and then she photographs the trash. And she'll say, two shoes, one T-shirt, assorted glass, and I thought of the image of those photographs that she takes when I listen to your poem. All right. Okay, Blaise Turley, would you read Vulture's Song, which I think is the last poem in here?
It is on page 16, and yes, I would love to.
Yes.
All right. The vultures gather, this time for one of their own. The funeral procession takes the form of a spiral, wings catching windrifts, some worse for wear, crooked feathers betraying bold silhouettes. They mourn loudly, then quietly, then scatter, like they were never there. The fledgling corpse remains, won't get picked up by maintenance until tomorrow, when the grieving flock will return to find only a memory. Other species chime in, their own numbers dwindling, though no one has seemed to take notice. The heron finds another pond. The cardinals sing something new. The grackles and crows are long gone. All too late. It's beginning again. The churning in, past the cliff's edge, already written.
Wow. Oh, that is really something. Inspired by an actual event, right? Would you talk
yes,
about that a little
bit? Yes, it
was.
I saw a young dead vulture in town, and it really struck me in the middle of the bird flu that has been going around and, like, yeah, kind of shrinking bird populations. It just really hit me, and I couldn't get the image out of my head.
Yeah, and yeah, I noticed that you said a fledgling. My neighbor has had, I think, 3 dead vultures in her yard. Pretty sure it was bird flu, and they don't even come and look at them anymore. They just say, you know, don't put on gloves, bag them up, put them away. So then, did you this time for one of their own? So is a gathering? Do you think of a gathering of vultures as a funeral under other circumstances, when the corpse is a deer, maybe?
Yeah, I do. I really love vultures, and I love corvids and scavenger species, and I do think that the reclaiming of other corpses like deer and roadkill is kind of like a funeral. It's reintegrating, like, back into the earth and the energy cycles, and I think it's its own kind of funeral.
Yeah, I don't know if any of you have read Zora Neale Hurston's "Their Eyes Were Watching God."
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Got three out of 4 nods. That's pretty good. She has a wonderful sequence in which, it's a whole comic thing that involves burying a mule that has become sort of a legend in the little town for its pranks. But then the vultures come and have a funeral, and they have a ritual before they begin to feed on the corpse of the mule, and they speak to one another. And I thought about that. I also thought about that when I saw a gathering of vultures on my own lawn, which you know, we shared vulture stories before the program. You're clearly talking about bird flu, but it seems like maybe it's an even broader sort of, I hate to use the word apocalypse, but I guess I'm fixing to. Some of the birds seem to be dying, and some of the birds are just going away. The heron finds another pond, you say. The cardinals sing something new, but it's all too late. And is it bird flu specifically, or is it some kind of broader sort of threat to the natural world?
It's a little more broad, for sure. I think it's anxiety, climate anxiety in general, just as cities grow bigger and kind of push species out. Like, there's birds that have started singing only at night so that they can hear each other in, like, major metropolitan areas. And just the way that creatures inhabit this world is having to change because of the way we inhabit the world. And I definitely worry about what that means. Some of it ends up being kind of cool, but it is also really bittersweet when it's cool.
Yeah, things like them only singing at night, and it's a wonderful detail. It's beginning again, the churning end past the cliff's edge, already written. Again. So has this threat existed? I mean, what's the element of repetition in there?
I think this threat has existed. There's been so many major extinction events throughout history. It's kind of part of a broader pattern. Edie actually talked about this at the poetry reading that we hosted, like, earlier this month. There's this pattern of extinction, but the earth still remains, and I found that very powerful when you spoke about that at the poetry reading. And just that there are these cycles of, like, kind of overconsumption in human history as well, and it's part of a broader pattern, and even down to bird flu, like pandemics are going to become increasingly more common, and it's part of this pattern. But even though my poem is a little bit dark, kind of already written, churning past the cliff's edge, but I do think that there is hope in the already written a little bit, that it's part of this broader cycle, that the earth will be here, even if it's scary to think about what that might mean and how different it might be.
Yeah. Edie, did you want to add something?
No, I'm just so excited to hear Blaze talking about this, because it's a subject that I have a lot of passion for. So, yeah, thank you for sharing the poem.
Oh, and I have neglected to say that the opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and guests only, and not those of KZSM or its parent corporation, SMTX-CRA. And Blaze, would you talk about, this guy has 16 lines in two groups of eight. Were you, it's sort of sonnet-ish. Were you thinking along those lines? Or?
I was thinking about some sort of symmetry, but as you can see, the second half, it kind of gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Not super neatly, but I was thinking about it getting quieter when I was writing that.
Yeah. Have you been writing poetry for a long time? I mean, this has the feeling of someone who's been reading and writing, you know, over the years.
Yeah, I've always been interested in writing, and I definitely really took to poetry when I was in high school, but I've been writing little comics and poems that I didn't know were poems when I was really young. And I made a lot of zines in high school. That was a lot of fun, and I still make zines. But I really love poetry and the written word in general, and reading and writing.
Well, good. Well, this is, well, I hope you keep doing it. I hope you all keep doing it. And we are up on one more break.
You ever wonder why so many incredible songs of the past and even present never get played on the radio? Me too. Well, that's all about to change. I'm Henry Invisible. I invite you to join me every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Central, for the Henry Invisible Radio Show. Let's listen to and celebrate some of the greatest and grooviest funk, soul, and dance music ever recorded together. Right here on KZSM 104.1 FM and live streaming on KZSM.org. See you there.
Bookmarked is brought to you in part by the Whitliff Collections at Texas State University. San Antonio has inspired generations of writers, musicians, and artists. Now, the city's creative currents are highlighted in a new exhibition at the Whitliff Collections. Spirit of San Antonio, drawn from the Whitliff's vast archival holdings, explores the city through many of its leading creative talents, including writers Sandra Cisneros, Rick Riordan, Carmen Tafoya, Naomi Shihab Nye, and many more. Also featured in the exhibition are selections from the extraordinary Ramon Hernandez Tejano Music Collection at the Whitliff, which includes treasured photographs and recordings from Tejano legends Selena, Flaco Jimenez, Sonny Ozuna, Steve Jordan, and more. Rounding out the exhibition are captivating images from celebrated photographers and artists weaving an unforgettable group portrait of this fascinating American city. On display now at the Whitliff Collections at Texas State University. For more information, please visit thewhitliffcollections.txstate.edu.
All right, welcome back to Bookmarked, where we are celebrating National Poetry Month with three poets from the current issue of When the River Speaks, a community-published poetry and art anthology in SMTX, and with Edie Watson, a poet and also one of the creators of this journal. Is that the way you like to think of yourself? I know you wouldn't let me call you the editor, so.
No, we don't really have an editor per se, so we're a team. I'm part of a team.
Yeah.
I'm a team member.
And anything, Blaze, you just read your poem, Vulture Song. So you were talking about you're about to do an art installation or something like that?
I am. Okay. I'm actually a part of a workshop group that's, all of us have not done a part of a showcase before with art, and so we're getting together to do that on the 19th.
Okay, where is it going to be?
Mothership Studios.
Okay.
And I'm making an art installation that will hopefully have a poetic aspect to it. It's going to be a phone booth that will connect you to one of my poems.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. All right. A phone booth that would connect you to the universe. Does anybody have any further comments now that you've had the chance to listen to each other? They're just all nodding happily. Yeah. So I guess they enjoyed it. I know I certainly did.
Well, I would like to say one thing, sure, about When the River Speaks and the I guess the intention, because what has really given me a lot of joy is coming to these events 4 times a year, and a lot of the poets have come up and they're first time poets that recite their poem, mm-hmm, their poetry for the first time, and it's so exciting, and they overcome their, you know, their jitters or whatever, and yeah, and we just clap for them. It's really a big deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that, Marita, because that's actually one of my favorite things at When the River Speaks, is when somebody comes up to the stage and they're a little shaky and they say, it's my first time, and you can tell they're so nervous, and it's such a warm group of people that's very accepting and just a really eclectic bunch of folks, mm-hmm, so it just feels like a welcoming place for people to come and share their work. So if you're out there and you're thinking about it, come hang out with us. Mm-hmm. We want to hear.
All right. It's like that space of connectivity that Jacqueline,
exactly,
writes about in her poem. You know, that you've,
and the enthusiasm, yeah, you can see. Folks come with such enthusiasm and, like, you know, they're paying attention to, like, they want to hear your voice. Mm-hmm. I'm here to hear you. I'm here to hold space for you and with you. So those are some of the things I experience when we're having those events.
Yeah, well, I'm very happy to have you all here in this particular space, even though we haven't had a fire engine go by yet. I shouldn't have said that.
Don't jinx it.
Or a motorcycle or somebody with one of those speakers. Mm-hmm. You know, they have competitions with those things, only you can't actually get in the car with them to measure it because it would destroy your hearing. I had a student tell me about that one time. Yeah. Edie, I can't have you in the studio without hearing from one or two of your poems. I've got a couple of recent ones. Would you read Should for me, please?
I will. This is a newish poem that I wrote as kind of like an exercise around the word should. I should get up off my ass and save the world. I should refill the birdbath, stop using plastic. I should grow my own food. I should inwardly bow to every person and stop eating meat. I should be less available, more perfect. I should play it cool and toot my own horn, but only enough to blend in. Grandmother says when you roll up your goods, it must fit upon your back. How much of what I carry is what I should? I want to blow like fluff on the wind, unencumbered, holy mother down below, but I keep hearing it's the end as we know it, and I should be in therapy. I should be in the streets. I should be in bed with you. I should be on my knees. Sweet Lord, I walk the train tracks in my dreams, footloose, singing myself towards and away from.
Love that. I love the should. I mean, I'm full of shoulds myself. Even literally, I should fill the birdbath. You know, and the way the poem kind of stops in the middle to question the litany of shoulds and then goes back to the litany of shoulds. Grandmother says, "When you roll up your goods, it must fit upon your back." Your actual grandmother?
Well, I like to think so. It's actually from a dream that I had. I like to think that it was an ancestor appearing in that dream.
Somebody just appeared in a dream and told you this?
Yes.
How did you interpret it then?
Well, you know, I think it's a kind of a personal koan that I'm still working with, but I do think there's something to be said for traveling lightly. Mm-hmm.
Traveling lightly would be traveling away from all those shoulds, right?
Yes.
And I can hear, not in the poem, but in the sort of the resonance of that, but isn't that irresponsible, you know, to just be a fluff?
That's the question, isn't it? It's always a balance of, like, how much news do I watch and, you know,
yeah.
Being engaged versus mental health.
Yeah. And is that what you mean by singing yourself towards and away from? Towards what? I mean, if you're away from all the shoulds, then go. If you go away from all the shoulds, then what are you going towards? It's kind of like that special space that Marita wants to go into in her poem.
Yeah, well, I think that's really the question that the poem is asking. You know, where do we go when we go away from the shoulds? Mm-hmm. Towards a space of liberation, hopefully, a personal liberation, towards your destiny.
Yeah.
You know?
And would you read... anybody want to add any comments or questions about that? They're just sitting here looking appreciative. So that's great. And we have in 5 minutes, you're going to tell us how to survive a time warp.
Okay, sure. Thank you. So I wrote this one when I was recovering from surgery and still a little out of it and feeling very disconnected from the world and, yeah.
Oh.
So how to survive a time warp. Text your friends. Do not be sad when they do not text back. It's yesterday where they are, or maybe next week. They are laughing and eating lunch without you, but do not be sad. Watch a movie. Pretend you live in a pod on Mars with no one. Write a stupid poem. The weather app says high winds at home. Here, the trees are still. Look out your window. See the Mars birds. Let reality jiggle like jello on your spoon. Remember, you live in outer space. Your feed says Trump and Elon, but you're like, who? I live here in this room with this screen and this gloom and these birds and a portion of time. The dress is blue. The dress is white. Hello, hello, goodbye, goodbye. Take your meds and light some sage.
I hadn't thought of that as funny when I read it, but when you read it, it's funny. You
know. Good, I'm glad. I meant it to be kind of funny. And
Yeah, and now that you tell me that you wrote it when you were recovering from surgery and evidently still somewhat under the influence of anesthetic, you know. Let reality jiggle like jello on your spoon. I was going to ask you about that, but maybe I should leave it alone and let it jiggle like jello.
Well, there was actual jello involved in the writing of this poem.
Oh, yeah, that's what they... You only get jello in school. Well, maybe if your mother made jello, if you're as old as I am, but otherwise jello is in school and in the hospital, right? And then you get, jello. So... The dress is blue, the dress is white. I thought I caught a reference there to, it was something that appeared off and on the internet. It was two photographs.
Yes.
Of a dress, and for some people it was blue, and for some people it was white, or if you put different trim on it, it was different. I can't exactly
remember.
Yes,
it was a meme that went around on the internet for a while, and it really drew like a bunch of attention to the way our perceptions differ.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people would swear that the dress was black and blue, and other people swore it was white and gold. There was another one that was like a sound file that went around, and people would hear it say like Yanny or Laurel.
Hmm.
And yeah, so...
There are the ones that say, if you something like, if you see an elephant, you're this, and if you see a monkey, you're that, but what you really see in the picture is a tiger, you know, or something like that. You know, have you seen those? And I always assume that that's done on purpose, but then again, maybe I'm the only one who sees the tiger, you know. Right. Yeah. Hello, hello, goodbye, goodbye, because you're in another universe.
Sure, yeah. Ground control to Major Tom.
All right. Well, we've got 2 minutes. I know what. Let's sign off. Say thank you. You remind everybody, if they want to be part of this journal, what they need to do. And then you can read Joy a counterspell to close the program.
I'd love to. Thank you. So we are always accepting submissions. You can also follow us on social media at When the River Speaks. We have active Instagram and Facebook accounts. We post all kinds of cool stuff on there. We will have our next open mic and issue release in July, so we're accepting publication or accepting poetry and artwork for that now. So please do send us your stuff. You can find the submission information online, and you can pick up your copy of the zine at the San Marcos Public Library and at a few places around town, some coffee shops and so forth.
All right. So, Edie Watson, thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you. And thank you so much, Marita Hutchinson, Jacqueline Miller, and Blaise Turley for coming and sharing your work with us. And as always, thank you for listening to Bookmark. And we're just going to close out with, is this a recent poem, Edie? The Joy of Counterspell?
Yes, it's a few months old.
It's a few months old. Because we all need joy, and so we'll just read that, and thank you for listening.
Thank you, Priscilla. Always a pleasure. Joy, a counterspell. Oh, there has been time enough for sorrow. Fallen bombs and burned trees, centuries scrawled with grief. Let there now be joy. Let there be love like clean water moving over and through us. Let there be joy in defiance of the 4D, bleached reefs and robots. Let's climb to the 5D on rungs of light, loving each other up into the age of Aquarius. Let us wear costumes and dance on the terrace. Let great peals of laughter come loose from our lungs, even as choppers in formation pass overhead. We know the empire cannot last. Let darkness become dawn as we sing and sling our arms around each other. Joy warriors, our spirits unkillable and ever unfolding, each life a lotus. Oh, let there be joy. Let there be joy. Let there be joy. Oh, my people, rise up singing. Blind them with your radiance.